Welcome to the debate. If you think back to elementary school, there was always, you know, that one game we played on the blacktop or in the gym.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Red light, green light.
The classic.
Right. So all the kids line up at one end. The teacher stands at the finish line and yells, green light, and everyone scrambles forward. Then red light, and you freeze. If you're caught moving when you haven't been explicitly authorized to do so, you're penalized. You're sent all the way back to the start.
You know, the fascinating thing about that childhood game is that, well, it isn't actually a race.
Right, yeah.
You don't win by crossing the line first. The goal is simply to get everyone across eventually without anyone stepping out of turn. It's really a system of managed, uniform progression where the pace is entirely dictated by a single authority figure.
Exactly. And when you look closely at the mechanics of that game, you realize it wasn't just recess, it was conditioning. It was this macro architecture for an industrialized education system designed to teach us how to wait for permission, how to be moved safely and efficiently from one place to another by an institution.
Mm-hmm.
So today, we are examining a piece of source material, a really provocative text called Me, Myself, and AI, Raising the Floor of Personal Agency. And it argues that this entire century-old paradigm is dead. The era of waiting for the corporate green light no longer exists.
It's completely gone, yeah.
Right. And the stakes here are incredibly high, because by waiting for your boss to tell you how to use AI today, you are actively participating in your own obsolescence.
Yeah, the author claims that while the traditional hierarchy had been fracturing for decades, you know, the release of consumer-level AI like ChatGPT and Gemini back in 2022, that was the ultimate fatal blow to this permission-based system.
Totally. And I will be fully advocating for the author's vision today, arguing that this, what they call the dawn of the age of the architect, represents a necessary evolution where AI empowers every single individual to act as the CEO of their own workflow.
Right. And I will be challenging that perspective from the standpoint of organizational leadership, arguing that what the text celebrates as this unsupervised renegade use of AI replaces vital corporate alignment with dangerous operational chaos.
Well, let's start by laying out our core positions on this shift. For me, the traditional corporate structure is undeniably a relic of an industrial age. I mean, as the text points out, the core to success used to be incredibly rigid.
Sure.
Show up on time, take breaks when given, do as you are told, and do not do anything you are not specifically assigned to do. And we've been watching this paradigm slowly die for 30 years. The author notes that the internet in the mid-90s made the green light flicker a bit.
Yeah.
Then the total disruption of remote work during the COVID pandemic fractured it further, right? Proving that independent, autonomous work was viable on a massive scale. But consumer AI was the absolute coup de grace. Today, for less than a $30 a month subscription, individuals can build a personalized team of AI advisors.
Right, which completely bypasses the IT department.
Entirely bypasses the old gatekeepers. It turns anyone, even an employee at the lowest level of data entry, into an architect. Think about the mechanics of that for a moment. A junior data clerk isn't just formatting cells anymore. They can prompt an AI to write a Python script that automates the formatting, analyzes the trends, and drafts an executive summary.
Mm.
They aren't waiting to be told how to work. They are designing the work themselves. The corporate permission system is, as the text states, a ghost.
I mean, I certainly acknowledge the disruptive power of AI, but I strongly push back on the author's total dismissal of corporate hierarchy as merely the ghost of the green light. We have to look at the author's specific perspective here to understand why that conclusion is flawed.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, the text explicitly draws on the author's background as an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, or a digital renegade running a business from home, managing contract workers. That viewpoint inherently blinds the author to the profound complexities of large-scale organizational alignment.
I don't know if blinds is the right word, but go on.
I think it does, because corporate leadership isn't just an arbitrary game of keeping people idle at a red light for the sake of power. It is about cohesive strategy, legal compliance, and quality control across thousands of moving parts. Encouraging every single employee to secretly act as a renegade CEO, managing their own unvetted AI teams to bypass standard procedures, that introduces massive operational risk.
Well,
just to borrow and adapt a concept here, imagine a complex city where instead of following a central grid, every single citizen decides to build and program their own traffic lights at whatever intersection they choose. That is an empowerment. That is a recipe for catastrophic gridlock and systemic failure.
Okay, the city metaphor is vivid, but that massive operational risk you're talking about is exactly why the author argues the traditional system is already broken. The gatekeepers are moving way too slowly to manage the traffic. The text actually compares today's corporate resistance to AI to the early days of the internet.
Right, the 90s example?
Yeah. Back in the late 90s, the author used early internet marketing tactics to get more people into technology presentations. He didn't ask permission. He just bypassed the conventional slow route and implemented the tactics.
And alienated a lot of people in the process, if I recall.
Well, the older members of the organization didn't receive it well, sure, but it increased sales. First, institutions resist the technology. Then they try to mandate exactly how you use it. And finally, they accept it as an inevitable engine of innovation. Trying to stop people from using AI to solve problems today is just a repeat of that failed resistance from 1995 to 2010. It is stifling innovation purely in the name of control.
I hear that. But the comparison between the early internet and generative AI is fundamentally flawed when we look at the mechanics of what these tools actually do. The internet, especially in 1995, was an information retrieval tool and a communication medium.
Right.
Generative AI agents act as unvetted contractors. They generate original material, they synthesize data, and crucially, they hallucinate facts. Let's look at the specific example the text uses to celebrate this bypassing of hierarchy. The author suggests that instead of using an IT specialist and a facilities manager to develop an RFQ, a request for quotation, an employee can now just architect a prompt and spin up an AI assistant to write the RFQ and pick the provider in less than an hour.
And the efficiency of that is undeniable. It empowers the individual to execute on complex, multi-layered tasks without waiting weeks for interdepartmental scheduling and endless alignment meetings.
Efficient, yes, but dangerously unsupervised in a corporate context. I mean, an RFQ for recabling an office or overhauling IT infrastructure contains highly technical specifications, compliance requirements, legal liabilities. Let's really drill down into how that actually works.
Okay.
If an AI hallucinates a specific cabling standard on an RFQ or fundamentally misunderstands the enterprise's existing server architecture and the company procures the wrong enterprise system based on that document, that costs the corporation millions of dollars in incompatible hardware and wasted labor.
Well, yeah, if they just blindly send it.
But that's the risk. The IT specialists and the facilities manager aren't just there to slow you down. They possess deep institutional knowledge. Hierarchy exists to manage complex, cascading risk, not just to withhold permission.
Look, I hear your concern about the cascading risk, but the text doesn't suggest that AI should operate completely without oversight. It suggests that the individual becomes the oversight.
The individual employee?
Yes. By architecting the workflow, the individual steps up to a higher level of cognitive work, which brings me to what I consider the text's boldest and most compelling claim. Fully embracing AI acts as a highly advanced leadership and management training program.
The author makes a massive promise there, claiming it is an absolute certainty that using AI trains you in leadership?
It is a massive promise, but the mechanics back it up, because AI models default to what the author calls helper status, meaning they will happily and enthusiastically help you develop a weak, flawed, or even completely stupid idea. The user is forced to learn how to set strict expectations. They have to articulate exactly what they want, establish constraints, and define success metrics. The text uses a brilliant analogy here. The author recalls playing competitive soccer in Florida as a kid. Before they ever touched a ball, the coach made them run the track distance and sprints for 2 weeks.
Just running.
The logic is that speed and endurance are baseline physiological requirements for every position on the field. Therefore, regardless of your position, people who play soccer must become better runners.
Okay,
The author argues that managing an AI team intrinsically builds the muscle of executive decision-making in the exact same way. If you are sweeping floors or doing data entry, but you are managing an AI to optimize your workflow, you're practicing expectation setting. You're practicing being a CEO.
Wait, I need to stop you there because I'm genuinely confused by that leap. Help me understand the bridge between writing a hyper-specific text prompt for a machine and actually managing human beings, because I fundamentally challenge the validity of calling this leadership.
Okay, why?
Let's look at the team the author suggests building for writing a book. The text says you can build a brainstorming partner, a research assistant, a critic, and an editorial assistant. So you are managing four entities, but you are managing them in a vacuum devoid of human friction.
The friction doesn't come from human emotion, though. It comes from the synthesis of competing ideas. Let me explain how that four-entity team actually operates, because it's not just sequentially asking four bots the same question.
All right, lay it out.
The user acts as the central executive node. You have the brainstorming AI generate 10 wild, expansive ideas. Then you feed those raw ideas into the critic AI, which you've explicitly prompted to tear down those ideas based on market constraints or logical flaws. Finally, you, the human, have to adjudicate that dispute.
Right.
You have to weigh the destruction of the critic against the original vision of the brainstormer and direct the editorial assistant on how to proceed. That synthesis, that requirement to constantly adjudicate competing inputs and make a definitive call, that is exactly the how of modern executive leadership.
But you are adjudicating a dispute between compliant algorithms. There is no emotional intelligence required in that synthesis. There are no office politics, no personal crises at home affecting performance, no conflicting career ambitions, and no resource scarcity.
But that's...
Text explicitly reveals the flaw in its own argument when it talks about what happens if an AI fails to deliver what you want. It says you can simply rewrite the architect prompt, which functions like a job description, and instantly replace the AI with a more qualified version. That is system optimization. It is programming. It is not leadership.
I disagree. True corporate leadership requires empathy, navigating profound human conflict, and inspiring people who might be actively resistant to your vision. Simply refining a text prompt until a language model outputs the exact spreadsheet you want does not prepare a junior employee to lead a team of complex human beings.
See, I think you're artificially separating system optimization from executive strategy. Setting clear expectations, which the text correctly identifies as the chief leadership skill, is something most human managers are actually terrible at.
Well, that's fair, right? Human managers are often vague, they avoid conflict, and they fail to articulate their actual objectives clearly. By forcing an individual to interact with an AI that only responds to hyper-clear, perfectly architected expectations, you are training that employee in the absolute fundamentals of delegation. But to address your point about what the human actually does with that output, if simply prompting an AI isn't full leadership, how does the individual actually take accountability for the result? That brings us to what the text calls the synthetic spine.
Ah, yes. Let's unpack the synthetic spine, because I think this gets to the very heart of the corporate risk we're talking about.
It's a fascinating concept. The text defines the synthetic spine as the ability to anchor down on ideas and goals and see them through with confidence. Let's say an employee has a bold idea, but is naturally risk-averse.
Okay.
When that employee collaborates with an AI to assess the risks of their idea, the AI systematically pushes aside the employee's personal, emotional biases. It reveals the true, objective picture of a situation, along with concrete mitigation strategies.
Right. It gives them the data.
Exactly. This allows the individual, who might normally be too intimidated to speak up in a boardroom, to bring fully fleshed out risk-mitigated strategies to their higher-ups. The AI acts as structural support for their courage. It creates intense personal accountability because they've modeled out the failures in advance. It allows them to move faster and learn more than their peers, democratizing the ability to formulate high-level strategy.
If you're listening to this and you work in middle management, you're probably siding with me right now, because you're thinking about the sheer chaos of auditing this synthetic spine.
Chaos?
Yes. It's a compelling psychological argument for the individual, sure. But have you considered the reality of where ultimate accountability actually rests within a corporate framework?
Well, the author says...
The author illustrates this synthetic spine using himself as an example. He says that when he writes a book using his team of AI agents, he must make the best decision possible. If the book fails in the market, he makes the final call, and he owns the failure. He can't blame his AI team. He must reassess his own leadership.
Exactly. That is complete, uncompromising personal ownership of the final product.
Yes, for an independent author. But inside a corporation, accountability simply does not work like that. Let's say our junior financial analyst uses their synthetic spine to develop an advanced strategic initiative, relying on a custom AI to assess the risks and push aside their bias, just as the text suggests.
Right.
They present it confidently. The management team assumes the analyst did to traditional rigorous legwork. It gets implemented, and it turns out the AI's risk assessment was fundamentally flawed based on hallucinated or outdated market data. The junior financial analyst might own the failure emotionally, but the corporation absorbs the financial and reputational damage. When an independent entrepreneur makes a mistake, they lose their own money. When a digital renegade operating inside a corporate hierarchy makes a mistake with an unvetted AI, they risk the livelihoods of their colleagues and the capital of shareholders.
But isn't that precisely why the author insists that we don't use AI to manage people, but rather we use people to manage AI? The individual is still squarely in the loop. The human is making the final call. The text doesn't suggest deploying AI completely autonomously to run the financial department.
No, but
it suggests empowering the human to do the work of an entire division by giving them the tools to architect their own solutions. If a manager restricts those tools out of a fear of liability, if they demand that every AI interaction go through a 6-month IT compliance review, they are essentially telling their workforce to stay at the starting line while their competitors are sprinting toward the finish.
I agree that keeping people artificially constrained at the starting line is a mistake, but there is a massive operational difference between sprinting blindly and running on a clearly marked track.
Fair enough.
If a company allows employees to spin up their own AI helpers at will for anything they need done, you lose standard operating procedures. You lose the ability to audit decision-making. If we face a regulatory audit, I can't just tell an auditor, oh, our junior financial analyst used an unvetted AI critic to vet the quarterly numbers, but we don't really know how they prompted it. We need structured oversight to ensure that the AI outputs align with reality.
Well, the reality is that structured oversight right now is largely failing to grasp the point of the technology. The text points out a crucial flaw in how corporate leadership is currently approaching this transition. Right now, companies are mostly looking at AI through the lens of pure cost reduction.
Yes.
They're sitting in boardrooms asking, how do we use AI to reduce headcount? And the author argues this is so incredibly short-sighted that in a few years, executives will deny they ever asked the question. Instead, they should be looking at what the renegades are doing. They should be asking, what can AI help our humans do better?
You know, on that specific point, we actually have significant convergence. I fully agree with the text's critique of the current corporate mindset regarding headcount reduction. If you only view AI as a mechanism to fire people and automate basic repetitive tasks, you are completely missing the transformational power of the technology.
Exactly.
The goal of organizational leadership should absolutely be augmenting human capability, allowing your workforce to achieve much higher quality work. Where I diverge from the author is simply on how that capability is integrated into the business. I want it brought in through the front door, thoroughly evaluated and aligned with company strategy. The author wants employees to sneak it in through the back door as a form of personal rebellion against the hierarchy.
The author would counter that the back door is the only way it gets in because the front door is guarded by the ghost of the green light. The gatekeepers are inherently conservative. If the young employee in the 90s had waited for the front door to open for internet marketing, his company would have lost years of competitive advantage.
That's a historical assumption, but okay.
The author is urging individuals to move now while everyone else is still standing still. The window of opportunity, according to the text, won't stay open long before the walls crumble and we enter the phase where institutions pretend everyone always knew it was the right path.
And I maintain that bypassing the gatekeepers entirely is a recipe for organizational chaos. AI is an incredibly powerful tool for augmentation, But the moment you start deploying custom, unvetted AI personas to generate corporate deliverables without the knowledge, oversight, or alignment of your management team, you are replacing corporate synergy with a chaotic swarm of isolated actors. Treating this technology as a license to act as a renegade CEO within an established organization prioritizes individual disruption over the collective good and institutional survival.
Well, as we wrap up the show, I want to summarize my stance by looking at the core premise of the text. The green light is permanently broken. The system of industrialized education and work that conditions us to wait to be told what to do is dead. AI is not just a software tool. It is a mirror for our own management capabilities. By seizing the opportunity to become architects of our own AI teams, individuals can fundamentally raise the floor of their personal agency. They are forced to learn how to set expectations, define objectives, and synthesize complex information, skills that elevate them far beyond mere task execution.
And my summary is a firm note of caution. While I agree that AI will profoundly augment human capability and that companies must immediately stop focusing purely on headcount reduction, we cannot abandon structured oversight. Encouraging a workforce to operate as digital renegades, completely bypassing institutional knowledge and risk management, introduces existential threats to organizational alignment. We need cohesive strategy, not just a disparate collection of employees proudly wielding their synthetic spines.
It's clear that while we both recognize the profound shift AI brings to the workplace, we fundamentally disagree on whether the individual or the institution should dictate its adoption. The source material offers a fascinating deep dive into this transition, and specifically it outlines 11 macro-level assistants that can be templatized to improve life results, detailing how to actually construct these AI personas for business, personal investing, and even health.
It certainly provides a detailed, practical blueprint for those looking to experiment with structuring their own AI interactions.
And it leaves us with a lingering thought. If you are sitting at your desk right now waiting for the teacher to yell green light before you take your next step, what happens if the teacher has already left the building? Thank you for joining us on The Debate.